Immigration and Trafficking with a new drama this evening. RC stars Lindsay Duncan and Stephen Ray in Ronit Bennett's unflinching tale about the continuing crisis in the Mediterranean.
Oh my God! David and Sarah are here. The place they're staying is half an hour from here. We could meet them for dinner tonight.
We see them in London all the time.
Wouldn't you like that? It's literally 30 minutes. It would be fun.
This is all the fun I want. Lying on the beach. I'll go if you want. Alice.
What's that?
What?
Over by the rocks.
Where?
Down there. No, further down. You see?
Yeah.
You see him?
Yeah, why am I looking at him?
He sort of just crawled out of the water. Your nose is getting a bit red.
Oh, is it?
Your shoulders look a bit red too. Give me.
He's lying down now. The guy in jeans. Face down.
That's what you do on a beach, isn't it? Lie down. That's why we're here. That's better. Let's put a bit more on your nose. Can't have you looking like Rudolph.
He's not moving.
Do you think we should do something?
I think we probably should.
What? What should we do?
The man Alice and Tom are looking at is the sole survivor of a shipwreck. His name is... We'll come to his name in a minute. It's the first time Alice and Tom have ever seen the survivor of a shipwreck. They're from Wimbledon. This is the third year in a row they have come to the Med. They love it here. Some seas are dark and some seas are scary. The North Sea is a dark sea. The North Atlantic makes me think of convoys torpedoed by U-boats and sailors freezing in its dread waters. The South Atlantic is scary, battleship grey and forbidding and unknowable. It leads to the Straits of Magellan, which no one in their right mind ever wants to sail through. The Pacific is Pacific, but it does have sharks. Desperate pirates prowl the Indian Ocean. In winter, the Baltic Sea lapping St. Petersburg thickens to a salt syrup before turning to ice. But the Mediterranean... The Mediterranean... The Med. The Mediterranean is a benign sea. In caves along its shore, our Stone Age ancestors painted horses, hyenas, bulls, and wolves. They stenciled their hands. When you gaze at these cave paintings, you can't help but be moved. They were just like us, these Stone Age men and women, full of wonder, inspired by beauty and nature's majesty. They were affected and saddened by death. They buried their dead with rituals of reverence and respect. They fished. They mined obsidian. They traded olives and animals and grain. This was a sea of brimming, varied, unstoppable life. Our sea was life-giving, life-enhancing. It was life-rich. It was all about life. This benign... Beautiful sea.
This is the life, eh?
The great thing is, even though I drank more last night than I normally would, I don't feel hungover at all.
It's because you don't have to do anything. We don't have to do anything.
You've been to the Med, haven't you? Who hasn't? Spain, Morocco, Egypt, south of France. Sicily, Greek islands, Rhodes, Malta, Crete, Cyprus, Turkey. We all know this sea. In a way no other sea is, it is our sea. We have all swum in its tideless waters, from Algeciras and Nice to Izmir and Bodrum. Some writers have called this great liquid continent the Friendly Sea.
That guy's still not moving. We should do something.
No one else is doing anything. He's getting up.
God, is that blood? Is he puking blood?
He's all right. Look, he's walking off. He's all right, he's fine.
He's all over the place, Alice. He can barely move.
He's fine. He's okay. Where's our water? I have to keep hydrated, especially in this heat.
He's fallen down again. I'm going to see what's wrong.
Tom!
The man Tom and Alice are looking at staggers up the beach. His name is Mahmoud. He is from Gaza. He is an illegal immigrant. Mahmoud doesn't know where he is. He set sail from a port in one of the sprawling suburbs of Alexandria 6 days ago with 287 other men, women and children. They are all dead now. 5 kilometres further down the coast, the bodies of two of his fellow passengers, Shaibal from Bangladesh and Letta Brahan from Eritrea, are lying on the beach, their faces covered by beach towels placed there by holidaymakers on a package tour from the Netherlands. Our sea is a graveyard. Our sea, the friendly sea, has become a new dead sea. Bodies float, bloated, bobbing, forlorn, skin stretched, limbs in frozen star jump attitude, men, women, and children. How has this happened? And what should our response be? What is the correct moral response? What is the humane political response? Who are we kidding? If these people were white, if they were called Leo and Lizzie instead of Mahmoud and Shaibal, if they were washing up on the beach at Brighton or Margate or Appledore, the correct moral response? We wouldn't even have to ask the question. We would be appalled. We would be revolted. We would be horrified and we would be angry. We'd have lookouts on the beaches with binoculars. We'd be taking blankets and hot drinks to survivors, wouldn't we? Wouldn't you? And you would be saying...
Excuse me.
This is totally disgusting and it's unacceptable and whatever is causing it has to stop.
Sorry, excuse me.
Because it is an affront to everything we hold decent. It is an affront.
What are you doing?
What?
This isn't the script.
I'm aware of that.
It's not what I wrote. You're going off-piste here, way off-piste. Could you just please go back to the script? Please.
The script says, and I quote, her tone continues dispassionate, neutral. And in that dispassionate, neutral tone, she asks these inane questions about something. Frankly, no one needs to ask anything because the answers are obvious.
They may be obvious to you, but not everyone thinks the same. There are different points of view. What we're doing is exploring the problem.
The problem? That's what you call it. Hundreds of people every week are drowning. And you want to explore that? You want to explore the problem? And you want me to be neutral?
I want you to play the part I've written and keep to the script. You don't have to shout to be heard.
That's just one of those sayings people pull out of the drawer. Saves them from engaging in the argument.
And shouting puts people off.
There are hundreds of people drowning every week. The ones who make it end up in places like Kos and get herded into football stadiums by riot police. They're left out in the sun. They faint from hunger and heat. No, I will not be neutral. Do you hear me? It is wrong to be neutral. There, I've said it. It's wrong. That's the only thing we need to say about it. It's wrong to be neutral in these circumstances with what's going on around us. It's wrong not to be outraged. It's that simple.
It's not that simple. And you're putting people off. You're putting me off. We're all outraged, and it's hard. It's really hard to find a way to express that without getting emotional, but that's what we have to do.
Why?
Because anyone can tell you how they feel about anything. So what?
It's equivocation. It's moral equivocation, what we're doing here, what you're doing here. There was a time when you used to shout. What happened to you?
I got hoarse. Can we move on?
I'm not being difficult here, am I? I'm not being ridiculous.
Not at all. I mean, I think we have a responsibility here.
Absolutely. Do we have a responsibility, actually?
Well, this is a big issue, isn't it? A live issue.
I don't know about you, but I'm just an actor. You know, get the script, come in, do my lines, even if, frankly, the lines are... Well, you know, they're not exactly Beckett, are they?
Just a reminder that the mics are on.
Sorry.
Do you think we could move on?
Yeah, that would definitely work for me.
Thank you. Line one, page 14.
Yep.
Maud! Maud!
Yes, sir? Yes, sir! It's you! My God! I can't believe it! Over here! Swim to me! Swim! That's it! Swim!
Yasser is one of my oldest friends. We were standing together on the boat when it was rammed, but I plunged so far down in the water that when I came up, I couldn't see him anywhere.
Swim! Swim! You can make it!
When I came to the surface, I found a life ring. I'm clinging to it now. I have to tell you, it's not easy. I'm cold, and before the smugglers rammed our boat and sunk us, I hadn't eaten for 2 days. The other problem is my hand. I'm missing 3 fingers on my left hand. There's a valley in my hand where my fingers should be. It's not pretty.
Swim, my friend! Swim!
I wasn't born this way. It's not genetic. I lost my 3 fingers in an Israeli missile strike in Gaza in 2009. I also lost a section of bone in my right arm and my pancreas. It's a pain, I can tell you. I'm in constant pain. I'm 22 years old. I was given permission to enter Israel in order to receive treatment. I had all the necessary documents. At the border checkpoint, I showed my documents. They were all in order. The guard took them to the commander, and the commander came up to me. That's when I knew I was in trouble. So I said, it's all right. I don't want to go to your hospital. I'll go home. But they arrested me anyway, and I got 3 years for being suspected terrorist. After prison, I was sent back to Gaza and all its rubble, minus my 3 fingers, the bone in my right arm, and my pancreas. You've probably never given your pancreas a second thought. The most embarrassing thing about not having a pancreas is that you have almost permanent diarrhea. After the missile strike, when I came round, I knew in that very second that my life would not be long. But that didn't stop me wanting a life. To live a life. We all want that, don't we? Life is there. It's there. But we have to reach for it. And some of us, we have to reach a little further.
Yasser, take my hand. Can you hold on? I've got you. I won't let you go.
I thought I was going to die.
I can't believe it's you. You know what this means? We're going to live, Yasser. Trust me. This kind of thing doesn't happen by chance. God is helping us.
Why didn't he help us when the smugglers rammed us, huh? We paid them and they sank us.
Help me! Help me, brother! Brother, I can't swim!
We have to help him.
No, no. What are you doing, Mahmoud? We can't take him.
I'm drowning.
No, there is no room for you.
No.
No, Mahmoud, we can't help him, please.
We're coming for you.
Listen to me.
No.
If we take him, he will kill us. The extra weight will kill us. I'm begging you. This is not just your life. It's my life, too. Don't do it.
He'll die without us.
He'll die with us. And we'll die with him. We'll all be swamped.
What do we do? Leave him to drown? What if he had the ring and you were the one screaming for help?
Even if it kills us?
Take my hand. Yeah. Take it. That's it. That's it.
Thank you. Thank you. God bless you.
You've just killed us, Mahmoud.
Thank you. That was great. Thank you. Okay, this is where you come in again.
Am I doing it in the dispassionate neutral tone?
Give it a try, yes. I think it'll work.
Right. When we swim in the Mediterranean, we think we are swimming in a warm sea. But actually, the Med fluctuates between an average high of 24 degrees centigrade in July, August, and a low of 15 degrees centigrade in January, February, which puts it within the parameters of cold water for the purposes of physiology. Mahmoud, Yasser, and Shaibal are in cold water. What happens when you hit cold water? When you hit it in the way Mahmoud, Yasser, Shaibal, and the other 285 passengers whose ship was rammed by the people smugglers they had paid to take them to Europe have just hit it, is that there is an immediate gasp response. If you're unlucky enough to have your head under the water when you gasp, there's a very good chance you'll drown. That's what's already happened to many of their fellow passengers. Those lucky enough to survive the initial cold water impact will, the longer they are in the water, have trouble holding their breath. They will hyperventilate. This will cause arterial hypocapnia, reduced CO2 in the blood, which leads to decreased brain blood flow and oxygen supply, followed by disorientation, loss of consciousness, and drowning.
Not another one! No! Get up!
Just for 5 minutes. I can't swim anymore. I'm exhausted. 5 minutes! And then I swear I'll let go. I swear!
You're kidding us!
5 minutes! Let me rest for 5 minutes!
Let him rest!
We're going to die!
There are now four of them holding onto a single life ring. They have no idea where they are. Their names are Mahmoud, Yasser, Shaibal, and Marwan. But we should give them a collective identity. There are a number of options here, most frequently 1. Migrants, 2. Immigrants, 3. Illegal immigrants, 4. Refugees. The option you choose will say something about you, though some of you might not want to think too deeply about that.
Maybe, maybe not, but it's not the script.
Right. Mahmoud, Yasser, Shaibal, and Marwan are all getting colder. In cold water, rapid skin cooling initiates peripheral vasoconstriction, as well as increased cardiac output, heart rate, and arterial blood pressure. In other words, being in cold water makes your heart go like the clappers. Sudden death can occur immediately or within a matter of minutes after immersion. And to make matters worse for our four illegal immigrants...
Help! Over here! Help! Please, help me!
It's a woman! Kick! Kick!
Oh, why not? Let's all die together!
Kick, Yasser, kick! We're coming!
Help me!
We're coming for you! Come on!
Oh, get me!
Sister, give me your hand! You're with us now!
And now they are five. Four men and one woman, clinging to a single life ring.
What is your name, sister?
Her name is Letta Brahan.
Where are you from, Letta Brahan?
I'm from Eritrea. My family didn't want me to come. I ran away. And now I'm going to drown.
No, you're not going to drown. The boats will come. They will save us.
Unfortunately for Mahmoud, the chances of a boat coming for them have been dramatically reduced. Before the end of 2014, the Italian government maintained a large-scale search and rescue program called Mare Nostrum. But this cost money, and so the Italians asked their European partners to help with funding. The Italians got some grudging support, but European leaders, including the British, decided that Mare Nostrum had the effect of encouraging people to make the crossing in the belief they'd be rescued in the event of shipwreck or capsizing. The money was cut, and Mare Nostrum was replaced by Triton, which is not a search and rescue mission, but a border security operation with restricted scope. The result has been a huge increase in drownings. On the face of it, cancelling Mare Nostrum seems to be a demonstration of such shocking indifference to human suffering that there has to be something we're missing. Something to show that it isn't as callous as it appears. Some explanation, some logic, some rationale. We're about to hear from Joyce Anne Ainley, Baroness Ainley of St. John's, Dame Commander of the British Empire. She was, at the time Operation Mare Nostrum was cancelled,
Minister of State, Foreign and Commonwealth Office.
The ideal person to tell us what we're not getting. So, Minister, would you care to explain the thinking behind the drastic scaling back of search and rescue missions in our sea?
We do not support planned search and rescue operations in the Mediterranean.
Yes, what we're trying to understand is why. Because if you don't support search and rescue, people will drown. How can the government let that happen?
The government is not letting it happen. In fact, the government is trying to spell it out for these people. This is a very dangerous crossing and you take it at your own risk.
We believe that search and rescue operations create an unintended pull factor, encouraging more migrants to attempt the dangerous sea crossing and thereby leading to more tragic and unnecessary deaths.
Exactly. By not sending boats and planes, we're actually saving lives in the long run.
I wonder if you can hear quite how heartless that sounds.
Boats, planes, rescue missions, that's not a solution. These people are just going to keep coming.
These people? These people?
OK, refugees, migrants, whatever. There are thousands of them, tens of thousands, maybe millions, and they are desperate. Look at Calais. Look at what they're doing to try to get to the UK. Jumping on lorries, walking through the tunnel with trains hurtling down the track, that's desperation, and having a few extra boats cruising around the Med isn't going to solve the problem.
I don't think this is about solving the problem.
Well, it should be.
It's about what we do and what the governments we elect are doing.
Is there any chance we could get back to the script?
What our government is doing is heartless and cruel. I mean, picture the scene. Could we have some water, please?
Wait. Water?
Bear with me just for a minute. Could I have some water and something like a motor launch, something like that?
Give her her water and her motor launch. I'm going to make some water of my own.
Great. Water, please. And the launch? So, I'm a European leader and I'm in my motor launch and I spy our five refugees clinging to their single life ring and I shout... Ahoy! Ahoy there!
Do you want us to...
Yeah, if you would.
Cool.
Oh, please!
That water looks jolly cold!
It's freezing!
God, this is terribly awkward. I can't throw you a rope! Oh, God, I feel terrible about this.
We're going to
drown!
Yep, I'm afraid so. You are going to drown. There's no other way to put it. You're going to drown.
But we won't drown if you help us.
But you see, that's exactly the problem. Under Operation Mare Nostrum, I could have helped you. But under Triton, well, you're in the wrong part of the sea.
What do you mean, the wrong part of the sea?
Under Triton, we don't rescue people in... this part of the sea.
Throw us a rope.
I know this is difficult for you to understand, especially in the situation you're in. But what you have to think about here is the big picture. By drowning, you will actually be saving others.
What are you talking about?
I did say it would be difficult, didn't I? And I don't blame you for not getting it. But you are actually saving others, and that should be some consolation to you. You're saving countless others. Perhaps even your own brothers and sisters, if you have any left. And isn't that really a marvellous thing? What a sacrifice to make! I'll altruism is something we all admire. I have to say, I admire you. I have the deepest, tremendous admiration for you five illegal immigrants clinging to your life ring. I really do, because what you're doing is actually heroic. It's noble. And I hope this doesn't sound pompous, but I will personally take away from here the unique example of your sacrifice. And I will remember your example to the end of my days. And I hope it will help make me a better person, if I may say that. You're an inspiration, really. Thank you. Goodbye.
No! No! Come back! Come leave us! Come back! Come back!
Of course, no European leader, as far as we know, has actually stood on the deck looking down at drowning refugees and refused to help. That would be bad, and it would make them feel terrible. Because it's about distance, isn't it? We avoid responsibility for even the most heinous act if there's enough physical distance between us and our victim.
That's all great. Thank you very much.
You're back!
Yes, back. And the thing is, we now have less than an hour of studio time left. So if there's any chance we could get back to the script...
Am I supposed to continue in a neutral tone here?
If you wouldn't mind.
So, continuing in a neutral tone. I don't know how the hell they sleep at night.
Less than an hour and counting... down.
Look, the thing is, there are other actors here and we're all waiting to tell our stories, you know?
Sorry, you're right. Sorry, didn't mean to step on toes.
Thank you. If you could just pick up with the question.
The question, yes, got it. Who lets a person drown? Whether you're alongside that person or whether you're in Whitehall. Even more important, perhaps, why does anyone let anyone drown?
I think that's a very loaded way to ask the question.
You do?
The way you're looking at me, honestly.
How am I looking at you?
You're looking at me as if I were a child murderer or something. We have to take a step back here and take into account what people in this country are actually going through. And we have to be able to have this debate without people saying that because you're worried about immigration, somehow that makes you prejudiced. There are whole towns and communities being swamped by huge numbers of migrants.
I notice you use the S word there.
Yes. And I'm not apologising. Swamped. People in some areas down the East Coast, they do feel like they're being swamped. They do feel under siege, and there's no use pretending otherwise. We all want to be fair to immigrants, but we have to be fair to our own people as well. And that's all I'm saying. Be fair to our own people.
So what you're saying is that Mahmoud, Yasser, Shaibal, Marwan and Letha Brahan are being drowned in the interests of fairness?
That is so ridiculous.
How is it ridiculous? You just said it.
You know what? This whole thing is actually starting to make my brain melt. My brain is literally melting. It's starting to pour out of my ears. But I'm beginning to suspect that's what you want. You're trying to turn people's brains to mush. You don't want people to think about the issue for themselves. You're telling them what to think and all the while pretending you're not. It's very easy to criticise, but what's your solution?
My solution?
No, the writer. He's the reason we're all here. What's his solution? He's got all the opinions, but what's his solution?
Good question. What's your solution?
I'm pointing to a problem. A problem we need to apprehend in human terms, because these are people. And, well, it's a problem.
In the interests of fairness, in the interests of you not making yourself look like a total prat... Do you want to have another go at answering that? What is your solution?
I don't think not having a solution makes me or anyone else look like a prat.
There's a saying in Italian. Non gettare il sasso e nascondere la mano. Don't throw the stone and then hide your hand. If this play is a stone, something you're lobbing, you have to stand over what you've just done. And that means not just telling people where they've gone wrong, but how to go right.
I don't agree at all. There's no obligation.
What's your solution? Just let them all in.
Do you have a solution?
He doesn't have one.
I really don't think that what I'm trying to do here is invalidated by not having a solution.
You don't have one, do you?
Can we just get on with the play? It's getting late.
Fine.
Brother, keep your head up. Keep your head out of the water.
I'm falling asleep.
You must keep your head out of the water.
I'm very cold.
We're all cold.
Tired.
very tired.
Hey. Keep your eyes open. You mustn't fall asleep. If you fall asleep, you'll die. Yes, sir. Help me get his head out of the water.
Let him go, Mahmoud. I can't help
No! Him. Help me! Come on! Yeah, wake up! Wake up!
Yes. I
have to stay awake.
What is your name?
What is your name, brother?
Shaibal.
Shaibal? We must stay awake. We must all stay awake.
Shaibal?
Who are you? Tell us who you are. Tell us your story.
Shaibal can't tell them that he paid $4,000 to an agent in Dakar. He spent another $2,800 to different people along the way. For fake stamps. For food. For travel. For accommodation. He was stranded in Mali for 6 days, alone in a house with only biscuits and juice. He was stranded again with 17 other Asians somewhere in the Sahara when their driver vanished. He was picked up and dumped in a date field in Algeria, where a farmer betrayed them to the police. The police drove them out to a scorching wasteland back on the border with Mali and left them there. Shaibal and his companions wandered for days until they found people in tents. They were lost too. The people in the tents called this place Zero. Shaibal eventually made it to Libya and then to Alexandria. The reason Shaibal can't tell them this is because he has been in the water, which is now 18 degrees centigrade, for 7 hours. Shaibal weighs 57 kilos. He has almost no body fat, and now he is dead. Now he is drifting away from the life ring and from the other four. He had a master's in civil engineering, and he hoped to find work in Spain, where he had a brother.
Go on. Keep your head up. Keep your head up.
I'm tired. I want to sleep.
No, brother. No sleep. Marwan. Marwan. Tell us who you are.
Marwan.
Where are you from, Marwan? Tell us. Tell us how you got here.
My name is Marwan. I am from Homs. In Syria. I traveled with my two cousins, my sister and her husband and their daughter. They were beside me on the boat when it was rammed. I don't know what happened to my cousins, my sister and her husband. I paid $4,000.
Keep your head out of the water. Keep it up. You too, little brother. You must stay awake.
Yes.
What about you, little brother? How much did you pay, little brother?
I paid $1,000.
It's cheap.
Tell us your story.
I crossed the border at night near Havira into Sudan. I was with my friend tonight. After 2 days, we ran out of food and water. A farmer took us in. He promised to bring us to a refugee camp. But he beat us and raped Sunat. Then he gave us some milk and told us to go. We walked for 3 more days when a truck stopped. The men were Sudanese. They had guns. They took us to a house where there were many Eritreans. The first thing I saw when I entered the house was a boy. He was naked, and they had hung him upside down and were beating him. They had a mobile phone, and they were talking to the boy's family, telling them what they were doing to their son. The boy was screaming. They wanted money to make us pay. They raped us and left us naked. They beat and burned us all over our bodies with cigarettes. My friend Sanat died in front of me, and I wanted to lie down and die. I was held in this house for 2 months. Eventually, my family paid. But they told me never to come back. And they would not pay again. With 7 others, I crossed Sudan and traveled through the Sahara. I was sold from smuggler to smuggler along the way. I do not know how many times I was raped. I am pregnant. We reached the border with Libya and began another journey through another desert. We ran into a group of soldiers. They gave us water and took us to a detention center. Then I escaped and got to Alexandria.
All right. Obviously, I'm the bad guy in all this, but I'm going to have to say the obvious. We're all terribly moved by what Letta Brahan has been through, assuming it's true.
Well, that is outrageous.
Well, you don't know. You're an actor like me. You're saying the lines he wrote, and he's just a writer. He doesn't know.
You know what? I'm going to say it. You're a bigot.
That's the way debate is closed down. Someone raises a question and they get called a bigot. End of debate.
You know why you're a bigot? Because Letta Brahan is black. Because Shabal is Indian. Because Marwan Yasser and Mahmud are Arabs. The thing they are not is white. And if they were white, their lives in your eyes would be a hell of a lot more important.
I'm not going to rise to that. It says more about you than it does about me. And my point stands. If what Letta Brahan is saying is true, it points to an obvious lesson. If you want to avoid all these horrors, don't make the journey. Stay at home. Isn't that obvious?
My house was one of the first to be destroyed in Homs. My little sister had both her legs blown off. She lived for 6 weeks. My father died of grief. Like over 2 million Syrians, I have no home.
I have a home of sorts. But my house is like a cell block in a huge prison. Gaza is a prison. And when you're in prison, it's natural to want to escape. I want to get to Germany. My brother lives in Hamburg. He says I will get medical treatment there.
Letta Brahan? Where is Letta Brahan?
She's gone.
5.5 hours later, Marwan dies. 2 hours after that, Yasser starts taking off his clothes. In 20 to 50% of hypothermia cases, deaths are associated with paradoxical undressing. This is what is happening to Yasser. He is disoriented, confused, and combative, and is desperately tearing at his clothes.
Yasser! Yasser!
Mahmoud clings to the life ring alone. Am I done?
When I was very young, I believed in God. And as part of that belief, I accepted the idea of his divine plan. The divine plan was mysterious, but it had to be right because it was God's. In the divine plan, suffering had meaning, which was at least some consolation. I was told and was ready to believe that it was wrong to turn away a beggar. That beggar could be an angel in disguise. Later I lost my faith and I discovered other certainties that pointed the way for me. I used to know what I thought, and I was known, I think, for being self-contained, self-reliant, for knowing who I was. I had solutions. Arrogantly, I thought I had solutions for everything, and I was not slow to tell people that I knew things they didn't. In recent years, I've suffered a crisis. Things have happened. Things that I don't understand and that have almost overthrown me. I have no answers anymore. I have no solutions. I can't offer even the beginning of a solution to this problem. I wish I could believe in God and his divine consoling plan. But I can't. That's gone. And the little faith I ever had in politicians is long gone. But I have seen and I have experienced kindness and compassion. There is good and bad in all of us. But mostly there is good. The question that plagues me in every aspect of my life is this. What is the right thing to do? Without God, without leaders we trust, how are we supposed to know the right thing to do? What should we do? Especially when the course of action that feels instinctively right is the one that entails the highest cost. What stops me from accepting it? Fear. Self-interest. Cowardice. I think I would give anything to have the answer to that question. To know how to live a justified life. To know the right thing to do.
He's still not moving. That's it. I'm going to see if he's okay.
Tom!
Are you okay? Do you need something? Water?
Yes.
Alice, he needs water.
Thank you. Is he okay, mate?
I saw him in the water. Then he, like, just crawled up the beach.
I've got water. Here.
Here, sip this.
Thank you.
Where have you come from? Can you hear me? Where have you come from?
I don't have the answer. I don't have it.
I made many friends on the boat. There were all kinds of different people. They were like me and they were like you. They were reaching for a life. They just had to reach further than you.
Every day, thousands of people reach our shores. They are exhausted. They are hungry, thirsty, cold, and frightened. They've gone through things few of us have ever come close to experiencing. They are reviled by governments. But here are people, and this is our sea.
In RC, the narrator was played by Lindsay Duncan. Stephen Ray played the writer. Mahmoud was played by Amir El-Mazri. Letta Bruand was played by Noma Dumezwani. Walid El-Ghadi was Yasser. Peter Singh played Shaibal. Rez Kempton Marwan. George Watkins was Tom and Evie Killip was Alice. The other parts were played by Jessica Turner and members of the cast. RC was written by Ronan Bennett. It was produced by Gemma McMullen and Jenny Thompson and directed by Stephen Wright. The World Tonight with Ritula Shah is in a moment, but first a very quick check of what's in store weather-wise for tomorrow. It'll be a largely dry and sunny day across the UK with some patchy cloud across northern England and northeastern Scotland to start with. But once the cloud breaks up, temperatures will rise to the high teens or even the low 20s. on FM, on longwave, on digital radio and online. This is BBC Radio 4.
It's 10 o'clock. Good evening. You're listening to The World Tonight with Rithula Shah. The head of the European Commission has urged EU countries to treat migrants with humanity, dignity and fairness.
This has to be done in a compulsory way. And I really hope that this time everyone will be on board.
We discuss whether one of the divides in Europe on the issue is between the former communist countries and their Western allies. And Syrian refugees already in Britain describe what it's like to begin life all over again.
Back in Syria, I finished studying medicine and I did 3 years in pediatrics. But here, I need to start from zero.
Also tonight...
I've always liked the Queen. She's just a lovely, lovely lady.
Hip, hip!
The Queen has thanked well-wishers after becoming the longest-reigning monarch in British history. We discuss whether we're living in a new Elizabethan era. But first, the BBC News is read by Zeb Soans.
The President of the European Commission, Jean-Claude Juncker, has said EU member states should accept a compulsory quota scheme to tackle the migrant crisis. He told the European Parliament bold action was needed to resettle 160,000 people. Germany backed the proposals, but David Cameron said the UK would take its own approach, and several Eastern European countries said they opposed quotas. From Strasbourg, Gavin Lee reports.
Jean-Claude Juncker admitted that the state of the EU was not in a good way. He appealed for EU leaders to open their arms to those fleeing war, to embrace a new approach to asylum in Europe, and not to point fingers of blame at Brussels. UKIP MEPs were amongst a number of Eurosceptic politicians who repeatedly voiced their objections to the EU's migration strategy. The UKIP leader, Nigel Farage, told the Chamber the EU was mad to accept so many refugees, and claimed jihadist groups were amongst those using the migration route through Europe. Mr. Juncker's plan, which Britain is exempt from, involves relocating 160,000 migrants currently in Italy, Greece and Hungary across another 22 EU countries, as well as fast-tracking the deportation of failed asylum seekers to countries where it's considered safe for them to return.
Danish police have stopped all rail services to and from Germany after migrants who wanted to travel on to Sweden refused to leave a train at the Danish port of Rødby. Police also closed a motorway when around 300 migrants left a holding centre and started walking towards Sweden. The Queen has become the longest-serving monarch in British history. She played down the significance of the occasion and chose to spend part of her day opening a railway at Tweedbank in the Scottish Borders. Our Royal Correspondent Peter Hunt was there.
It was a run-of-the-mill engagement, the opening of the new Scottish Borders Railway on a day which was far from run-of-the-mill. The Queen's entry into the record books, her overtaking of her great-great-grandmother Victoria, was, she told a crowd at Tweedbank, not something to which she'd ever aspired.
Inevitably, a long life can pass by many milestones. My own is no exception.